In 1995, China produced as many rare earth elements as the United States and 10 times more than India. Fast forward 30 years and China's production capacity is nearly 100 times that of India and 6 times that of the United States. Today, it accounts for over 80% of the rare earth element imports by India, the US and South Korea. And its dominance has only grown over the past decade. In high-value products such as permanent magnets, China controls more than 60% of the global supply chain. With Chinese trade restrictions increasingly disrupting access to these critical elements, can India and the world realistically hope to reduce dependence on Beijing? Welcome to Beyond Averages, our weekly data podcast where we try to decode the numbers behind the big stories. In this episode, we have with us Rajiv Maitra, partner Deloitte, and Rajneesh Gupta, tax partner and economic policy partner with EY India. Welcome to the show. Before I get to you both, let me first present a small explanation to the issue we are talking about today and how China came to dominate this segment. What are these rare earth elements? These 17 REEs form the bedrock of the new trade. Look at the colors in the blue, and you will find them in the lanthanoid series. These are all the rare earth elements that we have besides yttrium and scandium. Now, if you look at these elements, the light ones are the light rare earth elements and the dark ones are the heavy rare earth elements. Now, where are these used? Look at here. If you look at it, in magnetics, they have the largest proportion here. And within the magnetic series, these are mostly used in automotive parts, in microphones and speakers. So if you hear the issues around Indian automotive industries complaining about rare earths, the issue is they are mostly used in anti-lock brakes, automotive, frictionless bearings, which are mostly used in this thing. You look at microphones and speakers, your iPods and other things, iPhones, these are used there as well. They're used in MRI as well, which is your health equipment. You look at metal alloys and they're used in fuel cells and NIMH batteries. Mostly in defense, they have the application. If you remember China's first condition in April when it imposed restrictions on trade was that these cannot be used in defense. Now, this trade war started after Donald Trump started threatening China with higher tariffs. Look at catalysts and they're used in petroleum refining, air pollution controls, glass and polishing. They have a use, especially in UV resistant glass and X-ray imaging against health equipment. Health equipment comes here also, medical imaging, plus CRT, LPD, LCD displays. Ceramics, they have a use mostly in the sensors parts, which is again an important aspect of this. And these are what they form the bedrock of trade here. Now let's move on to what has China done in this segment and why are we talking about China? Now in 1995, as we discussed, China had about 30,000 metric ton of production in rare earths. US had 28,700, which was almost the same. India was 2,500. Now fast forward about 30 years and China is at 2,70,000. US is at 45,000. While India is at 2,900, not much change from 2,500 here. For China, it's a 9 times increase. For the US, it's almost doubling. So the difference between India and China is approximately 9 times. The difference between US and China is about 6 times if you look at it. That's the thing that China has done in this trade. Now, what more has happened is, during this time, the monopoly that China has also increased. Now, we are comparing two periods, which is 2012 and 2023. Now, in 2012, India, 78.3% of the imports were from China in these rare earth elements. 96.9% in 2023. Now, you look at US, and for the US, it was 16% share. Now, it's 79.5%. For Korea, it jumped from 20% to 89.2%. So China has really established its market in these elements. Moreover, if you look at it, in the final products also, India has become extremely dependent on China. This is permanent magnet trade, and India lies here at 82.9%, Korean Republic at 85.5%, European Union at 90%, and Pakistan, our neighbor, at 99.8%. Practically everything from China. US is at 75.3% here. Now let me get to our experts. Rajiv, the first question to you. China's production of rare earths has increased 9 times in 30 years, whereas India's remained constant. Where have we faltered?
Thanks, Ishan, for having me here. I think this is a very pertinent question. And thanks to the audience over here also. So if I look at China, I think the 4 things I would like to mention is, if you look at China, strategies with China, and of course, you showed that almost 84% of India's imports of rare earth magnets were China. So there are 3 planks on which China had grown. One is on the growth of domestic mines. You know, there has been intensive exploration and mine opening. So if you look at rare earth, there are 4 different types of deposits that are there. One is the carbonatite, second is the igneous, these are hard rock deposits. Then you have the clays, and then you have heavy mineral sands, and there are other kind of deposits. In China, we have most of these type of deposits available from a rare earth perspective. So they have opened up the mines, they have done exploration. Thus, they have captured almost 60 to 70% of global mine production. If you look at the USGS data, they are close to that number. The second aspect which they have done is access to international mineral assets in terms of rare earths. So the Chinese institution, they have invested close to $57 billion between 2000 to 2021 to secure long-term control over these assets, including rare earths. And the 75% of these investments were structured to ensure Chinese ownership stakes, and these arrangements granted offtake other aspects from China perspective. In 2023 alone, as per Economist, Chinese companies invested roughly $15 billion in foreign mines, securing access to assets. Third is basically the investment in processing capacity. The China companies have also invested substantial amounts in the processing infrastructure because they are now exporting more value-added products in the rare earth oxides. In India, we also do rare earth oxides, which is called, which can be premium oxide. But in China, they are exporting the finished products, which is the magnets and so on and so forth. Today, globally, almost 70 to 75% of rare earth elements are processed in China. If you look at in terms of overall production of mine, 390 million KT of rare earth offsets are produced in the world in terms of REO equivalent. China is producing almost 70% of that. And if you look at a Chinese company, about us, the rare earth, or some other companies, they are across the value chain, which is upstream, which is mining concentration, mineral processing, midstream, which is RE concentrate, high purity rare earth, as well as value-added products, intermediate value products. And last is, of course, the downstream in terms of permanent magnets, electric motors, and so on. They are present across the value chain, and they have scaled up substantially. So that has actually helped them kind of, up the game. But if you look at India perspective, we are in the upstream, we are in the mining part. We primarily produce rare earths from Bisan, which is from if I look at Bisan minerals and monazite, to be very precise. But we do not have substantial capacity in the downstream and to some extent in the midstream. And the midstream capacity is also very limited. Now we are just starting investments. I think probably this is how I'll put why China has kind of leapfrogged in terms of rare earths industry.
Rajneesh, you have worked in the mining sector, as we were discussing, you spent about 10 years, a decade at least in that. Is it an incentive issue or is it a investment issue? What would you categorize this as?
Yeah, I'm having a little problem with the audio. Could you just repeat the question, please? I didn't follow the first part of it.
So, you have worked in the mining sector for about a decade, as we were discussing. Is this an incentive issue or is this an investment issue? Why have we faltered with respect to China in terms of rare earth elements?
So I think, the whole ecosystem in India is very different from the ecosystem which is there in China. And what you have is, in China, one, you have had the resources. The second thing is that China has had a big downstream industry which is there, which has provided demand for that, whether it is in terms of EVs, whether it's in terms of electronics or other equipment. And that's why in the charts that you see that the import dependence on China has gone up. So it's been very, very natural as far as they are concerned. As far as we are concerned over here in India, really the issue has come up in the last few years. Before that, it wasn't really occupying the attention. And it's to do with a plethora of things. We haven't had that much of exploration, which is there. Our downstream manufacturing is something which is growing, but it's certainly not of the scale of what is there in China. So our circumstances have been very, very different, and rare earths are not the only mineral that we need. We need copper, we need a lot of other minerals. None of them have been explored. So I'd say fundamentally, the ecosystem in China, the economic context, the drivers have been very, very different vis-a-vis what they have been in India. And what you see today is an outcome of different economic forces working in the two countries.
Rajiv, let me get back to you on this question. When we talk about exploration, we haven't done much, not just in rare earths, but other elements as well. One question that arises is now India is making a lot of noise in terms of aligning with UK on some exploration and technology aspect and other countries as well. Why didn't we do this earlier? Is it a strategic oversight, or it's just that those opportunities weren't available at that point of time?
I think if I put this question, thanks, Ishan, for a great question. One is, of course, the kind of technologies that we need. I mean, typically, if I look at rare earths in India, as I said, there are two kinds of deposits, primarily in India. One is a hard rock, which is available in Rajasthan, Gujarat, and some of the other areas. Whereas if I look at the other deposit, which is around beach sand minerals. And beach sand minerals, we have explored pretty well. And, you know, you have from beach sand, you separate and get monazites. And to monazites, you get dari concentrates, so thereby, you know, rare earths, which is neodymium, praseodymium, some of the other rare earths. So that has been well explored in India, per se. What we have not done is the hard rock deep-seated deposits, which we are doing now. I think it's more about technology. The other aspect is, of course, the right amount of technology as well as, the kind of demand downstream. As Rajiv has mentioned, the downstream demand was pretty strong in terms of the magnets and the EV industry getting, significantly scaled up. That has also led to the upstream. So it's a mix of both. Since we already have rare earths, how do we scale it up? That's one of the things. Now, again, second point I would like to mention is, if I look at rare earths, there is a light rare earths you mentioned, which is up to a certain amount of elements. And then in heavy rare earths, be it gadolinium, be it terbium, and others. So we don't have good quality heavy rare earths. If I look at the beach sand minerals, the heavy rare earths percentage is extremely low. So that is also a challenge. But I think the technology for exploration and probably the focus as well as investments, now we are doing under NCMM, we are doing a lot of investment. There has been on the domestic exploration and foreign exploration. Now things will pick up really fast. That's what we need.
Rajneesh, going back to you. So now that we've discussed what the issues have been and what the issues have been in the past also and why we don't look at it for a certain respect as well, what can India now do to overcome these supply chain constraints on rare earth minerals? Because China has imposed those restrictions. Now, there was news that Europe is getting some of those. They have been approved. India is still yet to be approved on those aspects. So what can be done now on that aspect? What can we do?
Yeah, so I'd say, one, it requires a long-term strategy, which is there. One is a short-term fix, which is there, by which you could potentially get the supply. And we really need to look at the entire supply chain of the rare earths, basically, which is there when we look at the strategy for India. So I think the first thing is we need to get access to resources, the rare earth resources. They can be both domestic. They can be global. And really what you need to do is you need to maximize the exploration, which has been started. And so you really need to explore all the rocks which are there to know whether there are any rare earths which are available or not. Now, it is possible that you may not find all the resources in India. So you really also need to go global, maybe take the inspiration from countries like Japan, you know, which have invested in exploration and mines, taken minority positions and offtake contracts. If you find anything, then you really need to be able to mine the resource, bring it to production in a limited time frame. And so whatever is required from an infrastructure or an environmental approvals, you need to make it easy. Then even if you have mined it out, the next stage is refining and separation of the mineral, because your mineral content is very low. It's less than 1%, and you need to go to 99%. Now, those technologies obviously are very, very limited as of this point of time. They are very China-specific, and the technologies will also vary depending upon what resources are found. What is the quality of minerals in our country? They're not going to be identical. They're given by Mother Nature. So we require R&D. Need to both domestic R&D and to see whether we can get resources, access to technology from the others. So, for example, the Japanese have been doing some work and all that. Again, requires a multitude of this thing. And then looking at 3-4 other things, which is, looking at recycling, if that is possible, incentivize the setting up of magnet production. And also R&D to see whether it is possible to develop alternates to the rare earths which are there today. So all countries look at what resources are there and then develop products based upon the resources which are available. So I think it requires a multi-pronged, long-term, a strategic approach across the entire value chain which is there for us to have greater self-reliance, which will come over a period of time.
So are you talking about a rare earth alliance kind of a scenario where you build a permanent magnets or a rare earth alliance where you have these countries working together? Would that be the ideal situation?
You know, what is there is that rare earths are, or at least current position is that 90% of the supply is with one country. And today we are seeing that everything gets weaponized, whether it's the financial system or it's the oil or lithium or whatever it is, everything gets this thing. Now, in an ideal world, you'd like to have a market and you'd like to have a diversified supply, which is there, that which is one way of getting security. Now, in the absence of markets, you really need to partner with the other countries which are there to create a market, to put, whatever best each of you have on the table, so that none of the members are actually subject to a monopoly position in this particular industry.
Rajiv, as Rajneesh said, everything can be weaponized. So what should be our goal here? Are we looking at a scenario where we are just exploring a self-sufficiency in rare earths? Are we looking at a scenario where we can export them as well? Or are we looking at it from a perspective of breaking China's dominance? So what should be the strategy in this respect?
Thank you. I think it's a good question again. I would say all three. One is, of course, how do we get access to resources is going to be a key area. I mean, just to tell you, in terms of, we have very strong energy transition as well as, advanced application goals like aerospace and defense. And all these sectors need rare earth. I'm just going to give an example. There are a few rare earth elements which are very important, which is neodymium, praseodymium, which goes into your magnets. Today, the demand is anywhere between 2 to 3 KT, if not slightly more. We expect this to be almost 5 times in the next 5 to 6 times in the next 5 years. So today, I mean, just to give an example, India in FY22, India imported 19.3 KT of, I would say RE magnets. You know, there's an HS code, which is 850511. This year in FY25, we imported 53.7 KT. So this is growing exponentially. And some of these elements like NdPr, which is neodymium, praseodymium, and we have dysprosium, which have terbium. These are all growing because all these are required in advanced applications, be it space, be it refines with some of the applications in in nuclear reactors, solid fuels, EVs and energy transition requirements and so on. So all this will be required. So one is, of course, access to these resources, be it in India, be it outside. And there are countries, globally. I mean, if you look at some of the African countries, so we should look at some of the advanced or upcoming rare earth projects across the globe. So there are countries, in Africa, which have good quality rare earths. And they are, in looking for investment. So there are countries, if I look at Namibia, if I look at Madagascar, if I look at Malawi, if I look at Tanzania, Kenya, these are good quality rare earths. We call it in terms of TREO, which is total rare earth oxide content. These are very high quality, resources available. Even Brazil has good quality resources. So that is one. The second is, if I look at magnet, today the actually seeds for us is we have mining. We mine the rare earth ore, but we do some extent of ore separation to oxides, which is the oxides required. But the oxide refining to the metal or alloy, and manufacturing downstream, including magnets, that is kind of very limited today. I mean, so what we can do is we can look at investments, and already there is investments planned by a few players, including there's a recent announcement by a Hyderabad-based company who are investing in the India's first rare earth magnet plant with a plant capacity of 500 tons per annum, and it's going to scale up to 5,000 tons. Similarly, we are looking at other investments also. So that is the investment and the kind of incentive that are going to be provided in terms of be it viability gap funding, be it any kind of production incentive. Those are important. Third is very important is where do we get technology? So as Rashid mentioned, of course, China has a technology, but there are other players like Japan. Japan is the second most potent country in terms of having technology in rare earths, in magnets and other elements. So the partnership with countries like Japan can be helpful. And then all these countries, they are looking at a China plus one goal going forward. But India can be the producer, low cost producer. The technology can come from Japan or other countries. We can also source material in India, which is from the beach sand minerals as well as from the hard rock deposit that we are kind of exploring, or I would say at this point of time in India, but also globally. I mean, today the import duty on some of these elements are nil. So we can import these, we can process it here. But most important today for India is the processing capacity. We need to set up at scale processing capacities in India so that we can manufacture. And the industry need to be supported in terms of the right incentives so that they are, can scale up. Like, for example, what is happening in the PV module, for renewables. And thereby, we can actually not only supply for the Indian requirements, but also for the global requirements. And be a supplier of choice for some of these countries, which we are looking at a China plus one alternative.
So, realistically speaking, if I were to ask you, Rajib, how long would it take if we put everything into works today? How long would it take to establish these supply chains?
Typically, these supply chains would take anywhere between 5 to 10 years. And if you look at it from a self-reliance point of view, I would say 5 to 10 years with the right amount of support incentives is a good estimate to kind of be self-sufficient and, of course, be at scale for supplying to the Indian as well as global requirements.
Got it. Let me take you through a few more charts here. Now, it's not just an India problem, and I'll show you how. Now, if you look at the world has been equally dependent of China as India has been. Now, this is India here. Now, if you look at it, 73.5%, as we discussed, was India's share back in 2013. It's 82.9%. This is permanent magnets. 63.5% was world's in 2024 from 51% in 2013. So that has also increased. Why are we talking about India and gaining an advantage and the aspect of it? Is because India has been gaining in exports, as Rajib and Rajneesh both were talking about. Our exports in terms of your rare earth minerals has been going up. So this is 54.7%, 69.9 million dollars, and this was just 5.7 or 17.9. But look at the yawning gap with China. that's about 12 times there. That's much more than that in this aspect as well. So the gap is too high. Can India make up? And this is what we were discussing as of now. Look at where India stands. With 6,900 metric tons, India, 6,900 million metric tons, India has the capacity, 6.9 million metric tons, India has the capacity. It's the third largest country in terms of the rare earth thing. 21 is Brazil, 44 is here, Russia is at 3,800, again a friendly country, US is 1,900, turning to be very friendly, BRICS partner, South Africa is at 860. So we do have an advantage in certain aspects which we can build upon. Coming back to Rajneesh, in terms of promoting more R&D, what do you think the government needs to do? Is there a requirement for a research incentive scheme in this scenario? So my point is that what do you think the government needs to do is, as far as the R&D aspect is concerned, is there a requirement for a research incentive scheme where if companies do research, we give them incentives? Because we need to compete with China and other countries on a lot many aspects, including the capital requirements and the cost of capital.
So absolutely, the government has a significant role to play. And as you rightly said, it's not just the issue which is there with the rare earths. It's an issue which is there with the high-end manufacturing, also to do with LLMs, for example, on the AI side. Now, over the last few months, I have seen, and I'm a little, and it's a very pleasant thing, that the government has been quite proactive in whatever areas it thinks are very strategic to push R&D over there. So, for example, in the development of the LLMs, which is there, other aspects of AI, the government came out with a notice which was there inviting proposals. And they were, there was a fair bit of flexibility which was there for the players to put their proposals, because the outcome is very, very important for the country. And then they have gone ahead and selected people who go and develop the LLMs. So a similar thing needs to happen as far as the rare earths are concerned. And as we were talking, there are various aspects of R&D. It's processing. It is also whether you can come out with alternatives. So there are various aspects which are there. And we know, our R&D spend is about 0.7% of the GDP vis-a-vis 3.2%, which is the case for the US. So I think the government funding, pushing the Anusandhan program, and being a little bit more flexible in the way it gives out funds to people and doesn't put any onerous conditions which may stop. So for example, if you're doing early stage research, then the IP rights can stay with the university or the institution which is undertaking the research. So I think that's the need of the hour. It's the need of the day, basically, which is there. And government has a huge role to play. Now, specifically on the tax incentives, the government's generally been taking a role of simplifying the tax filings. And it's generally been looking at a scenario that there are few exemptions, a few incentives which are there under the direct tax code. And that's why all this push which is there of the various funds being set up and all that. And I think in that context, I think pushing more research in this area is what is warranted.
Rajib, the same question to you. Do we need research incentives? Two, I was just reading a paper about iron cell technology. So somebody was telling me that iron cell is also gaining ground. A lot of people are doing research in it as an alternative. So what is our role in these areas as well, where we can develop an alternative and step ahead of China in at least certain industries?
Again, I think if I look at R&D, it has to be on three or four fronts. One is, of course, how do we produce at scale, and how do we produce, using our domestic resources? As I said, if I look at a rare earth from a hard rock, which is, the concentration is on the lower side. And similarly, if I look at beach sand, also the concentration of both light rare earths as well as heavy rare earths on the lower side, particularly heavy rare earths. So one is of how do we use our domestic resources to scale up, and some of the alternate technologies, some of the innovative technologies like iron cell can be helpful. The second is technology for producing downstream products, be it magnets, which technology is more or less available, you know, like countries like Japan, but also some of the other advanced applications. So there also we need research. The third area of research that we need is around recovering rare earths from, you know, if the mine overburden as well as tailings. So in India, a lot of mines are there which have been exhausted or in the process of exhaustion. And we kind of typically have dumps, overburden dumps, as well as the tailing from the mine processing. So there also, there are a significant amount of rare earths that can be recovered. We published a paper in February this year, which talks about the potential it has. So that is one third area. The fourth area is recycling. If I look at recycling, some of the, you know, already the magnets, the spent magnets or some of the other products, that can also be the other option of getting rare earths, and thereby we also need R&D and research around that. So all the four areas, and what we would suggest is that you know, having a, you know, I would say nodal resource agency for rare earths is going to be very critical, because then the focus can be entirely on this kind of research. And of course the government support is already there under NCMM and other various teams. Anusandhan is one option, but we need a focus, and we need a nodal research agency for rare earths going forward to kind of work with these technologies, both from a processing point of view, as well as from mining and recovering from, you know, I would say waste materials.
A rare earth supply chain integration would take about 5 to 10 years. We would have to be more cognizant of what we can develop in terms of R&D. The government needs to be more supportive, more pragmatic about this, rather than being more having inhibition about what will happen under R&D. And even if India cannot establish a dominance in rare earth elements, it can endeavor to become self-sufficient. Those are the takeaways that we have from today's discussion, some of them at least. Thank you, Rajeev. Thank you, Rajneesh, for coming on the show. It was great to have you. We'd love to have you back again.
Thank you.
A few years ago, the late Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee added Jai Vigyan to the famous Jai Jawan, Jai Kisan clarion call in the 1960s. Today, all the elements are inextricably interlinked. Our Jawans and Kisans need the technology to extract more out of their efforts. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis. Stay tuned to Money Control. Thank you.